GoDaddy.com. Use the code PODNAME139 for $7.49.com domain names, normally $9.95. GoDaddy.com. Tango Tango Papa 1101, June 29, 2009.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening. I guess it's sort of in the middle of the night, or kind of maybe early in the morning, from Jackson, currently driving through Jackson, Tennessee. I am on my way over to Rossville, Tennessee, which is over in the Memphis area. Going to be picking a load up here in a while that delivers to Wilmington, Illinois. I ended up spending all day Saturday up there at that Flying J truck stop I was at, and it was just north of the Tennessee-Kentucky border. On I-65 north of Nashville, probably about, 60 miles north of Nashville maybe. And, I was just waiting for them to send me the load information. And so, I guess it was around, I guess it was around 11 o'clock or a little bit after p.m., I was in bed and I heard the Qualcomm beep. I would have probably woke up at that point, or maybe another hour or so, I would have probably woke up on my own. But the Qualcomm beep did wake me up, and so I, they sent the message offering the load to me, and even though it was a pre-planned load, but they didn't really want to send the information until they got word from the shipper that the trailer was actually loaded with the load. So that came, I guess it was after 11 o'clock, 11 p.m. So I went ahead and got up and kind of got around, and they'd also sent the... course, when they sent the load, the actual load, when they dispatched me on the load or my truck on the load, it also sent a, the fuel, suggestion where to get fuel at. And there was a pilot truck stop about 4 miles north at Franklin, Kentucky, of where I was at, Franklin, Kentucky. So I drove, went up there to the pilot truck stop and filled the truck up with fuel. And, and then I've been headed towards the Memphis area since then. But that was really the thing that was kind of stopping me from going anywhere. Because originally on Friday, sometime Friday, the guy said, well, just go ahead and head over towards the Memphis area. Don't go to the shipper, but just head over there and stop somewhere. And I didn't do it because I didn't have enough fuel, and I was kind of waiting around. And then they said, well, you can contact your you contact your terminal, your fleet manager, whatever, and you can get them to get you some fuel. And that's usually a thankless task to try to do that. I would have if I would have had to, but didn't do it. I didn't want to mess up. I didn't want to drive and then mess up my 14 hours. So, and I'd already determined that I'd be able, if they sent it by midnight, obviously, that I'd still be able to drive over to Memphis and drive part of the way to Wilmington, and then take a, you know, take at least a 10-hour break, and then finish driving up there on Monday, because it unloads at 8 p.m. Or 2000 hours Monday evening. You know, so I think that's the 29th. Actually, at this point, that would be tomorrow. So, because it's actually the 28th. I'm confused now. I think today's the 28th. I don't know, whatever. But anyway, I think today's Sunday, and it delivers Monday evening up in Wilmington, Illinois. So I ended up, I don't know, I could have been podcasting, I guess. I could have made a podcast yesterday, but didn't do it. I was just kind of spent a good chunk of the day watching a bunch more of those TED, T-E-D, talks, and didn't, I finally ran into one that was kind of interesting that I felt was worth me commenting on, so I kind of set it aside. And but there's a lot of those, I don't know, it just depends, but there's a lot of them that that are just sort of interesting, and then there's you know, they're just, then there's some that are just, you know, to be honest, they're just boring waste of time. And then they're, you know, so I'd say the majority of them seem to be just interesting. And once in a while, they're very interesting, you know, depending on the person and depending on what they're talking about, you know, what kind of questions they're asking and what have you. And, you know, but generally speaking, some of those people are just, sometimes they're just boring as hell. But I guess, you know, they can't have great people, you know, with everything that they put out can't be great. Every presentation that they make at those conferences can't be, obviously just can't be as, you know, as good as they get. You know, you're always going to have some that are mediocre, some that are okay, that are kind of interesting, and then you're going to have some that are really interesting. And then, of course, that also depends on your perspective, you know, and your own interests, you know, as to what's interesting and what's not. So, but generally speaking, those are, you know, they're well worth watching if you've got the ability to download them and the time to watch them. They are pretty interesting, and I've still got I don't know, at least probably 190 or more that I'm still downloading. You know, and obviously that's a time-consuming process, and that's going to take a while to download all those. So in the meantime, I'm watching the ones that have already downloaded, and I've still got, you know, probably, I don't know, hours and hours worth of material to watch. I think that usually the longest talk is around maybe, the very longest ones are maybe 30 minutes. Most of them are around 20 or 22 minutes. Some of them are very short. Some of them are only like 5 minutes, 7 minutes. I think I saw one that was like 3 minutes. And, you know, but generally speaking, they're kind of interesting. So, but it is, a lot of those are held in the Monterey Bay Area. And then I've also noticed that they've had some at Oxford, England. So I guess sometimes they move it around. And I think one of them was at, I think, if I'm thinking correctly, one of them was like in, you know, like San Diego or someplace. So I think they do occasionally move the thing around. But I think the vast majority of them that I've seen are held in a Monterey Bay. But it's interesting because most of those people, tend to be very liberal, you know, and they've got a certain groupthink that goes on, and many of them, as they're kind of giving their little talks, you know, they'll, you know, it's almost as if they are under pressure to, or they feel compelled, probably be a better way of putting it. It's probably a mixture of both, but they feel compelled to, you know, throw in their little political, left-wing political barbs or whatever. You know, and then probably the ones that feel pressure, you know, the left-leaning pressure, and let's say that they don't think that way, but they have to, they just kind of, when it comes to politics, they just kind of keep their mouth shut, and then they just kind of stick to whatever it is that they're presenting. And I guess one of the big rules for anyone that's giving any kind of presentation at the TED conference is that they cannot be selling their own business. So, you know, they can't really, you know, the guy that organizes that does not want people selling. And I think that's actually a pretty good rule, because obviously a lot of those people would be selling something, and, you know, their own businesses. And so that's just the big rule, probably the biggest rule, I think, is, you know, they can't be promoting their own business. And even though they can talk about whatever it is they're involved with, that's different. And but they're not selling anything. So, but it is interesting to, you know, these, generally speaking, a lot of these people sort of, they're patting each other on the back, you know, and how intelligent they are, and they'll even tell each other that they're the elites and they're smarter than everybody else and they should be in charge of everybody else. And, you know, it's just kind of, it's cliche, but there are people that think that way. And, you know, you get in the right group of people, and you know, when they're talking back and forth, and they actually say those words. You know, I've got this one that I sat aside. You know, this guy basically said, "We're the elite. We should be ruling." Basically, is what he was saying, and he made no bones about it. So, but I've got that one set aside, and when I'm recording right now, I'm recording on the H2, the Zoom H2. But so the next time I, you know, I have a chance and I'm recording on the computer, obviously I'm going to do a start-stop on that one. Now what I may do with that one, parts of his talk, or, you know, this other talk that I've, this next one that I've got, are sort of irrelevant, and then there are parts of it that are more relevant. So I may, if I have time, instead of playing the entire thing, you know, it's because it's one of the longer talks, what I might do is just cut out the relevant parts and, you know, edit that out, edit it down, and then just, kind of do the start-stop on the part that's been, you know, the relevant parts that have been edited down. So, but we'll see. So, but in any case, it's very interesting what people will do. As I was talking in the last podcast, you know, if you're a scientist, and you know, if we're searching people, if you have any curiosity at all, you're a scientist. You're kind of, you know, or like, you're kind of a, some of us are sort of like scientists. You know, chances are, if you enjoy listening to me, then you kind of think in a like-minded way, at least to a certain extent, as I do. And so we're sort of sort of have a, you know, kind of a scientific mindset, you know, kind of common sense. But the problem is that if you're in denial about something, or you've made false assumptions, you've got false assumptions about either yourself, certainly, well, it works this way. If you got false assumptions about yourself, if you're in denial about certain things regarding yourself, then you fundamentally are going to have some flaws in your reasoning. And you're going to, because if you're in denial about the things about yourself, certain assumptions, or you're in denial about yourself, you know, and you won't look at yourself, then because of the nature of the universe around you, the nature of the universe around us is kind of a fractal nature, and I'll talk more about that in a minute. If you're in denial and you won't look at yourself honestly, then you cannot look at the world around you honestly, and that applies to your dealings with other people as well as the physical universe around us, because they're all fractals. And now I had an episode, I don't know, it's been quite a few episodes ago, I talked about fractals. And, you know, there's some, you can look it up in Google or look it up on, you know, Wikipedia is another one. There's an excellent article on Wikipedia that talks about, you know, explains what fractals are. But fractals sort of started out as a sort of a mathematical type construct. And basically the idea, you know, I don't have the Wikipedia article in front of me, obviously, because I'm driving. But essentially the idea is that, you know, probably the best way to understand it, you know, like you've probably seen a picture of a fractal, you know, like a mathematical fractal, you know, and then somebody, you know, kind of, you see this weird looking pattern that just repeats and repeats and repeats and repeats and repeats, and you can zoom in on it, and it just repeats and repeats and repeats, and it's sort of like a repeating, it's kind of like a repeating equation in a way. But, you know, and you can zoom out and still see the same pattern, and then you can zoom in on the smaller parts that are connecting to it and still see exactly the same pattern, and it continues and continues and continues. And so the universe around us is basically a fractal. You know, there's fractals all over the place, and that's why you can take a good example of a fractal. You know, look at an atom. Look at how an atom's constructed. You know, and it's got a nucleus, and it's got electrons and protons and what have you that are in orbit around it. That are in orbit around that nucleus, and that makes up the atom. Well, you know, you scale up, and you've got the Earth going around the Sun, same principle, going around and around and around. And you scale up some more, and you've got galaxies that are in orbit around, you know, this, you know, around some center, and so on and so forth. So it all, you know, you can go as down to the smallest little, you know, like the atom, and you see the things rotating, and you know, a body's rotating around a center, and you can go out to, you know, kind of go out to the macrocosm, and the same thing, the same principles are involved. You know, something rotating around another center. And so that's an example of a fractal. But there are, you know, there are a lot of other fractals. Another example would be how we as human beings, you know, in many ways how our minds work. There are examples of that that we can kind of look, you know, look at in nature, look at it in the world around, in the universe around us, and we can see something, we can understand something about ourselves, because it's the same fractal sort of applied to a different area. And so therefore, that's why I say, if you're in denial about yourself, if you're in denial about something, you won't face your conscience, then you can, it even applies to the physical universe. You look out at the physical universe and you don't, you know, you're in denial of something there too, because you're in denial of it within yourself, then you deny it on the outside as well. Kind of deny it on the inside, deny it on the outside. And what am I talking about? Well, all of these people, it's interesting, all of these people have this atheistic idea, you know, at this TED conference, most of them talk, or, you know, that most of them seem to have this atheistic idea, not all of them, but most of them, sort of just vehemently sort of anti-God, God can't exist, we're the only things that exists, we're smart, we're smarter than, you know, we must be God, is basically the mindset. And what that ends up doing, they're you know, it's not that they just are basically claiming to be agnostic, they don't know if there's a God. Many of these people are actually, you know, kind of turning atheism into a religion, saying there is no God. And that becomes a religion unto itself. And so when they look at the universe, they just assume that, well, that there is no God. And it would be kind of like, you know, if you have mathematics and you take the zero away, then you'd have a really hard time getting math to work right. You know, you'd have to jump through all kinds of mental hoops in order to try to make it work, to make math work, if you took zero out of the concept. And so that's basically what they're doing when they're looking at the universe. They're taking the they're taking God out of the equation, basically. But they're taking, you know, you can call it God force or whatever it is you want to call it, whatever name you want to call it. They're trying to take that out of the equation, and then, you know, they kind of come up with all these mental constructs in order to try to understand the universe. And so they've got some, you know, you've had people like Einstein and people like that came up with some really good ideas about how the universe works, but it doesn't really get to the heart of the matter. You know, it leaves out a major part, of course, that being God. And you know, so I, you know, of course, I've been listening to Roy Masters for I don't know, at least 27 years ago was the first time I ever heard him on the radio. And you know, so I've been aware of him for a very long time. For a while there, I was listening a lot, and then in the more recent years, I still love what the man says, and I'll still occasionally listen. But you know, I don't need him anymore. Like I, you know, at first, you know, it was very useful to listen to him. But after a while, you know, you kind of go on your own little journey. And so that's kind of what I've done. You know, I just kind of naturally just kind of went off on my own little journey. And I think that's what we all have to do, by the way. But in any case, in recent years, Roy Masters has been kind of curious. He's always had this curiosity about physics and how the universe works and what have you. And so he's been, you know, he's kind of like an amateur physicist. You know, he doesn't have any formal education, but he's just, you know, and that's the thing. See, you can, I really believe that you can know anything if you have a curiosity about it. If you have a curiosity about whatever it is, doesn't matter what it is, if you're friends with your common sense, to put it simply, I believe that you can know anything, at least about the physical universe and as much as there is to know. And I think it could be the physical universe or your own nature, or the, you know, kind of the nature of God. You know, it's kind of endless. But I believe that we can kind of know anything. We can kind of self-educate ourselves. And so that's kind of what he did. He's done. And so he's, you know, so last night he had this, he's got a regular radio show that's on, I think it's like 150 stations nationwide, plus XM, talk radio network. And so he was, he had this special show last night where he was talking about the, you know, because a few years ago he wrote this book called Finding God in Physics, which is really an excellent book. I've mentioned it before. It's very interesting because it kind of, you know, it's well worth reading if you've never read it. But he's come up with some, you know, he's been writing some other like white papers, you know, kind of continuing to develop the ideas that he originally put in that book, Finding God in Physics. And you know, it's quite fascinating because, you know, it's what he's saying, you know, in part is that gravity sort of drives everything. You know, we don't really know what gravity is. You know, we have no clue. You know, we can say that it's, you know, we can try to define it as a property of matter, is what conventional science has done. But what Roy's saying in this theory is that, in this new theory is that that he's come up with, is that gravity is, you know, is a force that's everywhere, equally, sort of everywhere, equally spread out in the universe. But that matter, you know, basically matter, time and space and energy are properties of gravity. And you know, and as he presents it, it makes perfect sense. You know, and what is it? You know, if you understand atoms, you know, what is it that, you know, and in the atom, what is it that keeps the atom spinning? You know, what is it that keeps that, you know, the thing spinning? It doesn't slow down. Over time, the speed of the stuff that's spinning in the atom doesn't slow down. It keeps going at the same speed. Well, how can that be? You know, that implies that there's something that's spinning it. There's something that's continuing to spin it. You know, or otherwise it would, you know, in this universe it would slow down and stop. But it, you know, it doesn't. It keeps spinning. You know, all the atoms, you know, the thing keeps spinning just at the right rate. Now, how can that be? You know, and, you know, let's say the universe is 14 billion years old. Well, that's a pretty long time. How is it that 14 billion years later that all of the matter, all of the atoms that make up the matter, all of those atoms, they're all still spinning at the same rate. How can that be? You know, if there's a spin, there has to be a spinner. If there's a spin force, in his words, then there has to be a spin source. And so, you know, someone that's a professed atheist, an avowed, so-called avowed atheist, that, you know, they you know, that most of those people claim to have an interest in science and what have you, and, you know, they look at the universe and, you know, and try to decide how it was that it came about, what was its origin, and the idea of a God that, you know, or a God force really upsets them. You know, it's upsetting because they can't face their own conscience, because that's also the same thing, in a manner of speaking. They can't face their own conscience. They're in denial. They're trying to play God themselves. Then they look out and try to understand the universe and how it works, and they are therefore in denial of the truth there as well. And, you know, so it's, you know, it's useful, you know, all the math and what have you that they come up with in order to, you know, to understand, you know, about orbits and cycles and what have you. All of that math is very valid, but they've only got part of the picture, because they're in denial of the entire thing. And, you know, so that, you know, now I don't believe that we can ever understand God himself, you know, as far as how did God come to be. You know, we go into existence, we go out of existence, we come into it, we go out of it, come into existence, go out of existence. You know, and we cannot wrap our minds around the idea of a God that always is and always has been, always will be. Our minds, you know, we can say the words, but we can't really understand how that can be, other than to simply, you know, accept it. But we can understand how, you know, how God created the universe, how he sustains it. And actually, that if you can, you know, what Roy Masters has come up with in this theory of his of the universe really is actually rather simple. You know, if you can just imagine a force, the force of gravity, whatever that is, we don't really know what it is, but it's there. And just imagine that force is equally present everywhere in the universe, going in it, traveling in every direction, sort of passing through itself. But that out of it, it gives birth to, and he kind of explains how, but it sort of gives birth to matter, and so on and so forth, and sort of sustains it through it's kind of one thing turning into another, turning into another, turning into another. And, you know, so, but it's easily understandable. If you can kind of, but you have to be willing to, to understand it, you have to be willing to kind of face your own conscience. You know, that's a necessary part. And it really is. It really is a necessary part. And so all of the, you know, a lot of the people in this world that think that, you know, they're trying to be scientific and they got their scientific method and what have you, are sort of blinded because, you know, even when it comes to them doing science, because they're blinded, they're in denial of their own conscience. And they've, you know, a lot of these people have kind of been educated out of their common sense. And, you know, so it's, but that's very interesting. I think that program's probably still available on the, it's FHU, F as in Frank, H as in Henry, U as in under, FHU.com. And I think they'll probably leave that up there for several days. He's also got a white paper, basically. It's a PDF that you can actually download. I think it's, I don't know, it's, I forget how many pages it is. It's not huge. But, and it's, you might have to read it a few times in order to understand it. But the basic ideas are extremely, you know, I found it extremely interesting. And, of course, I was able to download it and save it to my hard drive. And so I'm going to, you know, reread through that again. As that was one of the things, I guess, when did I do that? Day before yesterday? Friday, I think Friday afternoon I read through that. Or it might have been, no, I guess it was actually while I was still up at that Petro truck stop in Kentucky, I downloaded it and read through it, and it's actually quite fascinating. But it's a little hard to understand, you know. But you know, if you can kind of once you get the concepts and you can kind of understand the basic concepts, then it kind of becomes easy to understand, because then, you know, there are sort of fractal examples in our own world, you know, in our own existence. They're sort of fractal examples that we're very familiar with. That then you can begin to understand how that actually, you know, how the universe actually works and how matter is kind of created. Then you can sort of understand the concepts. And so it's fascinating stuff. But science, you know, a lot of scientists are in complete denial of essentially God. And you know, they ridicule the people that believe in God. And of course, the religion, people that are involved in religion are obviously, you know, a lot of them are easily ridiculable. That's not a word, I just made it up, but they can be easily ridiculed because they, you know, quite frankly, it's obvious. I mean, you look at a lot of people that are involved in traditional religions, and they're kind of plastic, fake, and phony, and how they go about the, you know, their religion and what have you, and whichever one it is, and you know, it's obvious that. You know, the fakeness and the phoniness of it is pretty obvious. And they're sort of imbibing it, sort of using, you know, not everybody, I didn't say everybody, but a lot of people that are involved in traditional religion are sort of imbibing it in such a way that, you know, they're able to, you know, they're using it as a denial mechanism so that they don't have to face the very conscience. So they don't have to face the very God that they profess to believe in and that they're professing to worship. You know, it's a really strange thing what people do. You know, and that's kind of like the ultimate denial mechanism. They turn the words about the truth into a denial mechanism, and then they, you know, kind of follow it mechanically. And it, you know, it's not doing them a bit of good when they do that. You know, maybe keeping them in jail so they don't fall farther, possibly, at best. But, you know, now there's long been this argument about, you know, creation versus evolution. You know, and I've kind of come to believe that it's obvious that, you know, we didn't, you know, I think, you know, let me put it this way. I think that you know, God, you know, you could say God used evolution to create us, but certainly God was the intelligent driving force and is the intelligent driving force behind, you know, you could say it's evolution, or God is the intelligent driving force behind our world, behind all life, and behind human beings. You know, and I don't believe in, you know, in the idea of direct creation. I think that's kind of, it's kind of a, I don't want to say it's a silly idea, but in a way it actually is kind of a silly idea. You know, but so we did sort of evolve, if you want to, you know, for lack of a better term, we did sort of evolve, you know, life did become more complex over time. You know, and one thing became another and became an, you know, simple fractal. One thing became another, became another, became another. And, you know, out of the that initial life, whatever it was, initial DNA. So, you know, I think that's obviously, that seems pretty reasonable to me. But again, what's the force behind it? What's the force that that's kept atoms, the same atoms, spinning for 14 billion years? If we want to accept that as the age of the universe, what's kept those atoms spinning all that time? You know, what has it been? So, in other words, if there is such a thing as evolution, then, you know, if we evolved, then there has to be an evolver. There has to be some force behind evolution to make it happen. It just wouldn't happen on its own. There was some force behind it that actually made it happen. It wasn't random, and it just wasn't happenstance. You know, that's basically what they try to say, that, you know, they have this idea of some little quantum singularity, little tiny particle that blew up and kind of became the entire universe, kind of like blowing up Big Bang like a firecracker. Well, that doesn't, you know, how could it even exist? You know, how could the particle exist if there was nothing, you know, if space and there was nothing around it in order to exist? That doesn't make any sense. You know, it couldn't exist. So, you know, but it, as I said, it, you know, if matter is spinning, then there has to be a spinner. If there's a spin force, then there has to be a spin source behind the force. And so if we evolved, as I believe we did, there's an evolver. There has to be an evolving force. Simple as that. Simple, complete, simple logic. And so, you know, it's interesting. You know, I just find these kind of topics extremely extremely interesting. You know, they're just kind of endlessly interesting to think about. As I said, you know, the universe is full of fractals, sort of, you know, these repeating patterns, and they can repeat in many, many different ways. And, you know, so another, that's another way of saying that, you know, I've talked about quite a bit in the past, you know, how animals have to follow their instincts. They don't have any choice. They must follow their animal instincts. They have to be whatever it is that they were created to be. They don't have a choice. But, you know, so they're, that's kind of a fractal. They're sort of a, you know, they're sort of slaves of the force that evolved them. We'll put it that way. Human beings are different. We have a choice. So in other words, animals being kind of slave fractals, have to, you know, they have to follow their instincts. They have to be whatever that force, the evolutionary force created them to be, and that's what they are. And they can't be anything more than, you know, they have to follow the evolutionary force. But human beings don't have to. We have a choice, and that's. What sets, that's one of the things that sets us apart from the all the other life forms around us on this world. God wants to give us his identity, but we have a choice as to whether we accept it or not. Whereas every other animal on this world, on this earth, every other life form has to, it has the identity that God gave it, and it has no choice about it. It's a slave to that identity. If you want to think of instinct as identity, it's a slave of that identity, and it has to follow it. It doesn't have any choice. And so we're you can almost think of human beings as a sort of a special kind of fractal, you know, and, you know, the Bible says we're made in the image of God. Well, we're a fractal of God. That's putting it in different language, but it makes perfect sense. But, you know, with the exception that we don't have to take the identity that, you know, he's not forcing his identity on us. It's something that we can sort of choose, but we can't do it egotistically. We can't be God ourselves. That's not possible. So, you know, but, you know, it's just kind of interesting. You know, you think of it in terms of fractals, then you can begin to understand in a kind of using different language in a kind of a different way, the same principles. So I believe if you can understand sort of the very basis or the basics of how the universe works, how we were created, how we are sustained, how we are evolved, how the universe was evolved, how we are evolved. You know, and you can just kind of look at that and understand it, and it kind of it's almost as if it blows life into all of the mathematics and studies of science and what have you. You have a simple appreciation. A simple appreciation of not only the form and the structure and the ingeniousness of it all, but you also have an appreciation of the force and the intelligence behind it, and that is what worship really is. At its very essence, it's a simple appreciation. You appreciate the world around you. You appreciate the universe is created, how it's sustained, how God created us, you know, it evolved us. You know, if evolution's true, then there was if you have evolved, then there must be an evolver. If you have a spin, then there must be a spin force. And that spin force has to have a spin source. Something's got to be spinning it. Something has to be evolving us and the universe around us. And simply appreciating the beauty of it is tantamount to worship. To worshiping the creator that's behind it. And that's not to say that, you know, there are people that end up worshiping nature and, you know, this and that, and they get all silly. Well, that's, you know, worshiping the creation and not the creator. You know, so there's a kind of a fine line of distinction between, you know, because you can understand and appreciate the beauty of it, but not worship. You know, you can understand and appreciate the beauty of a tree, for example, but that's not to say that you worship the tree and the tree's God. It's not. It's simply an expression of God. And so that's an important distinction. But again, you know, going back, you know, if you are in denial of your own conscience, which is, let me turn that down, which is essentially, you know, is from the same source, then, you know, you'd be up a creek, trying to really understand the universe, because again, you know, if there's a source behind it, there's a source behind it all, behind that brought the universe around us, that brought the matter that makes up this universe, that makes up our bodies into existence. And so therefore you have to be able to, you know, you'd be up a creek if you had to, you know, it's all proven, and there's, you know, on the back side of that there obviously is some sort of God, and yet you're in denial of your own conscience, you're in big trouble. And so there are, you know, there's, you know, with this idea that Roy Masters has come up with, this new theory of the universe, there's going to be a huge amount of resistance to it, and people are going to poo-poo it and say, oh, he's not a physicist, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, be that as it may, I think that there's a lot of validity behind what he says, behind this theory that he's come up with, and I think that it's going to be scientifically, you know, the predictions that the model makes are scientifically provable, and you know, that's going to put a lot of people into a big quandary. And you're going to, but that, you know, you're still going to have people that deny it. You know, when the, if you go back, you know, when the Wright brothers were, you know, they flew the first plane at Kitty Hawk, made the first flight for a number of, that was before communications, obviously, before, you know, the widespread electronic communications, before television, obviously, and movies and what have you. For several years, there was a period of several years where people were saying that's not true. People were in denial about it, and they were saying that's just, it's basically a myth, it's not true, man can't fly. And it took a long time before people began to, you know, they finally accepted the fact that yes, it's true, yeah, here it is. And so the same thing always happens. You know, people can remain in denial. There are people that are still in denial to this day, trying to claim that the Earth is flat. You know, there's a Flat Earth Society. Now, I don't know how they can do that without being insane. You know, how can you maintain a belief like that in the face of... you know, it's obviously not true, but yet there are some people that try to do that, and you really have to kind of be insane to do that. So, you know, there will always be people that are in denial of the truth, but you know, of the truth of, you know, not only God, but just physically how the world works. So, but it's, you know, that's an interesting, that's a very interesting theory that he's come up with. Now, I did put a blog post on my blog. You go to truckertompodcast.com. I think I've got Trucker Tom blog pointed at that, too. I need to check that. Need to make a note and check that. But truckertompodcast.com. And you look down, it should be, you know, maybe the second or the third entry down at this point, but there's a link to his white paper, to Roy Masters' white paper about, it's called Gravity-Driven Universe, and so you should, you know, you can find that and download it and give it a read. As I say, it might be a little bit difficult to understand, but, you know, it's not impossible. Just give it a chance. It's not impossible to understand. And if you can get the physical models, if you can kind of understand it in terms of the physical world, what you know to be the physical world around you, if you can kind of understand that in those terms, you know, then it becomes easy. It becomes much easier to, you know, to begin to understand what he's saying. You know, because you get into the concepts of space and time and what have you, and that, you know, it kind of gets, you know, it's kind of hard to wrap your mind around some of those concepts. But then again, you know, it's not impossible. And, well, for example, you know, you can almost, sort of a fractal of the universe you know, this kind of this sort of unified field theory. You know, just imagine that you're, you know, and this is in that white paper. Just imagine that you're scuba diving, you know, and you're in the ocean, you're scuba diving, and you got the water around you, and you're kind of, you know, you can kind of feel the resistance of the water, or maybe you'd, you know, if there's a very strong current, or maybe there's no little or no current at all, and so, but you see little things, kind of some things are floating. Small things are floating faster by you, and some things are going slower. Bigger things are going slower. And just imagine that, you know, the water suddenly just kind of disappears. You can't see the water anymore. But yet everything is still moving the way it was, but you just can't see the water. Well, that's kind of a way of imagining, you know, this gravity, you know, is something that we can't see with our eyes. We can feel it with our material bodies, certainly, but we cannot see it with our eyes. But if we can, you know, you just use that as sort of a metaphor, you know, then you can begin to understand his theory and what he's saying. And so it's very, very fascinating. Very fascinating stuff, and I believe it's eminently understandable. You know, I think if we, you know, this isn't complicated. Of course, you know, physicists and scientists always try to have a way of kind of making things very complex, making things seem so complicated. When in fact they really aren't, you know. If you have all of the parts to the puzzle, then it becomes, you know, it's not that complicated. It really isn't that complicated. It's kind of like, you know, if you take if you try to teach somebody mathematics and you take the concept of zero away, they're going to have a terrible time trying to make the math work, you know. But then, if you know, so if you have to have a zero if you're going to have a one in math, and you know, math just won't work right if you take the concept of zero away. Well, the same is true with trying to understand the universe, the physical universe around us, or our minds. You take God out of the equation, you know, the force behind the force out of the equation, and it doesn't work. You know, it makes it very difficult to try to understand. So, but as I say, you know, download that, give that a read. It's very interesting. And, you know, don't, if you can't understand it right away, just come, you know, just read through it. And then just kind of come back to it later. And that's true of anything. If you don't understand something, then it's a good idea to just kind of, you know, let it be. Don't struggle to try to understand something. Just kind of let it be, and then maybe come, you know, think about it. You're going to naturally probably think about it, and then kind of come back to it later, and you'll understand it better. And that's true of anything. You know, don't ever feel pressured into trying to understand something. Don't ever let anyone pressure you and try to learn something, for example, because if you learn something as a result of pressure, then you simply get brainwashed by it. You know, if you can, you know, the better way to learn is to kind of compare what you're learning to your common sense, you know, and you know, then you get into the problem. Well, you know, somebody, you know, you've had this idea sort of ingrained into you, you know, certain ideas, and then that's what kind of ends up giving you a bias. If you've got a wrong idea, sometimes wrong ideas die, you know, they die hard. It takes a while for a wrong idea to, or a wrong concept to kind of die out, and, you know, people won't let go of those very easily. And that's especially true, if you have any kind of denial involved, personal denial, then trying to, understand yourself or understand the world around you because of the fractal nature of it becomes difficult or even impossible until you can really begin to look at yourself, make friends with your conscience, make friends with your common sense. And as I say, I think it's possible to know anything you want to know. You can learn anything that you have an interest in. Well, it's now almost 3 hours later. I've picked the load up at Rossville, Tennessee, and then so now I'm in Arkansas driving north on Interstate 55. After I crossed, when you cross from on Interstate 55 from Tennessee into Arkansas, you just go like a couple of miles, and there's a state scale there. And typically, I never, when I go like into Arkansas on a state scale, I never have them pull me inside, but they did today, and so apparently they were doing lots of inspections. Just kind of not really super detailed, but detailed enough. And so anyway, the guy found out that, because he's looking over everything pretty good, that I actually have an exhaust, kind of a split in my exhaust. You get this big exhaust pipe that comes out of the back of the truck, and then it kind of, and it curves around and goes up, and hooks to the exhaust that goes straight up. And so there's actually a split in that I had missed. And so I'm glad that I found it, basically. Because that's kind of one of the things that I just don't really look at that closely. Obviously I should be, but hadn't really noticed. I would have probably eventually noticed it, but in any case, there's, I'm not getting any exhaust fumes in the truck or anything. But that's certainly something that needs to be fixed. And I think the B service is due on this truck anyway. So probably once I get unloaded at Wilmington, Illinois, I'll have them send me over. They've got a little terminal there with a repair shop at Ottawa, Illinois. I usually avoid going in there because they're not the friendliest people in the world, but and it's a tiny place with very little parking. But in any case, I'll tell the breakdown department or somebody about it and see what they say, but that's probably as good a place as any to get the maintenance done and get the exhaust. I don't know if they'll just, how they'll fix that. That's up to them, but there's probably a variety of ways that they can fix it, but there is a split, and that's the only thing the guy found wrong, and he just, wrote it down on the paper, never put me out of service or anything like that. Very nice about it. And so I'm glad that that happened, and that he spotted the problem, basically. So anyway, getting back to what I was talking about before, if you can see, sort of metaphorically, if you can see how the universe works, and you can really understand it, there's something amazing happens, because then you can really understand that God does exist. There is an intelligent force behind our existence that keeps this existence going, that evolves us. And, you know, you could say, well, you know, you hear people talk about faith and leap of faith and what have you. But if you can really kind of come to, I guess where the leap of faith part comes in is having the leap of faith to just face your conscience without resentment and go through the pain, and I think that's where maybe the faith part comes in. But beyond that, if you've got simple curiosity and you want to really know what the truth is, regardless of what it is, you just want to know the truth without having any of your own ego involved with it, then you know, the words kind of fall apart, but it becomes very obvious that God does exist. And as I say, the words do tend to sort of fall apart at that point, but it's kind of an amazing thing if you can see that for yourself, and you must be able to see it for yourself. You can hear me talk about it, and it's just words. You know, it may just be words, and it will be just words unless you can experience that for yourself. So if you can understand, if you can begin to understand how the universe works, how your mind works, then at that point you can begin to really experience God for yourself. And that's about the best words that I can put it into at this point. But it's really an amazing thing. Now, if you were one of those people that just despises the idea of God and you want to be your own God, you got a big ego that cannot admit it's wrong, and you actually hate God, you know, because there are people that hate God, you know, and want to exist apart from God, separate themselves from God to be their own God, deny the existence of God, then a simple understanding of how the universe works, of course, is completely threatening. And will likely also provoke, you know, can even provoke kind of violent reactions from people that, you know, don't really want to understand, even though they might claim that they do. In fact, they don't. If you know, they don't want to understand if it means that they have to sort of acknowledge God whether they want to or not. And but if you, I don't know, if you love God, if you love your conscience, if you love your common sense, then if you can, you know, begin to understand the physics behind the universe, then, you know, it's and you know, it deepens. Again, the words kind of fall apart, but it really does deepen the understanding and the awe, the sheer awe that you feel, that you see, you have, you experience from seeing how it all works, understanding how it all kind of works and comes together. Now it's a little bit later. I guess it's about 12:11 in the afternoon. I have stopped at, there's a TA truck stop at Matthews, Missouri, which is in southeast Missouri along Interstate 55, a little bit south of where I'm going to turn off on Interstate 57, which cuts up over into Illinois. According to my GPS, I still have about 374.8 more miles to travel tomorrow. Have to be there at where I'm delivering at, Wilmington, Illinois. Supposed to be there by 8 p.m. tomorrow or Monday evening. So, I don't know. Might get there a little earlier than that. Probably will do that. Don't know yet. If I go to bed here in a bit, I'll probably end up waking up again, you know, depending on how, you know, early I go to bed. Maybe 11 p.m. or midnight or 1 o'clock. It could vary a little bit. So, that would mean, you know, if I left here, let's say I left here at 1 o'clock, I'd probably get there, I'd say around 9 a.m. in the morning. So that would be quite a few hours earlier than what, you know, than the appointment time. They might take it early, but then on the other hand, then the problem would be that if I had to sit there for several hours while I was waiting for them to take the load, I wouldn't be able to go anywhere anyway because of the 14-hour limit. If I start my day at, let's say I started it at 1 a.m., then that would mean that it would have to be over at 2 p.m. And, you know, so if I got there at 9 o'clock, I'd have to take at least a 10-hour break. If I got there, let's say, at 9 o'clock in the morning, and they didn't unload it very quick, then I'd just kind of be stuck there. So I'll have to sort of figure that out as I go along, I guess. Probably time it so that I'll get there sometime, maybe maybe around noon or afternoon. Later than that, I don't know. It just depends. So anyway, probably better be getting this thing assembled and then get headed towards bed here in a bit. It seems pretty warm here. It's this part of Missouri. It's probably, I'm guessing, the temperature's in the 90s. The air conditioner's doing a little bit better job today than it was yesterday. There where I was at that Flying J truck stop in Kentucky, the air conditioner was kind of barely keeping up there for a while. And it seems to be doing a better job here, so it may be maybe not quite as warm, and then the sun is not really hitting inside the truck. The sun's out, but it's it's not really hitting inside the truck, so you know that probably figures into it too. But I did notice yesterday that it was the air conditioner was having a hard time keeping up, and today it does seem to be doing quite a bit better. Because yesterday when I was, especially if I would stand up like I am right now in the sleeper, I could really feel the heat in the top part of the cab, and today that's not happening. So might be a little cooler here. I don't know, but it is pretty warm and humid. But it's that time of year. So, anyhow, hope everyone has a great week. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa.
He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.